Hello and welcome to Food for the Future podcast, broadcasting live from the World Food Forum headquarters in Rome, Italy. I'm Alexandra, your host, and today we are exploring the Global Youth Action Plan, an ambitious roadmap created by the World Food Forum's Youth Policy Board to address food security and sustainability challenges across the globe. This plan, launched at our 2024 flagship event, sets the region-specific priorities that were shaped through consultation with young groups worldwide. Leaders at the event emphasized the importance of collaboration and actionable steps to bring this vision to life. In today's episode, we will hear from the World Food Forum Youth Policy Board members who will share their insights on their region's key challenges, policy goals, and their commitment to making a real impact on global agri-food systems. Let's dive in. It's really nice having you all here, our Youth Policy Board members. And before we start with our questions, I would like to ask you if you could shortly introduce yourself, tell me where you're coming from, just tell us a bit more about you.
Hello, and thank you so much for having us. My name is Andy Limguni, but I'm better known as Andy. I'm from Johannesburg in South Africa. I'm a serial social entrepreneur working at the intersection of food systems and climate change. I'm really dedicated to bridging the gap between high-level initiatives to ensure that we have more systematic change in food systems.
Hello, I am Joko Trirubianto. I'm from Indonesia, all the way from Indonesia, and I am part of the Youth Policy Board Asia Pacific. Mostly I work on healthier and sustainable food consumption among young people in Indonesia with healthheroes.id. So looking forward to work together with the World Food Forum.
Thank you for having me. My name is Michaela Highland-Wood. I'm from Australia and I'm on the YPB both as the co-chair and a member for the Asia Pacific team. I work at the intersection of land and water science and international development, working to design and deliver impactful development projects that increase the human capacity in the countries that we work in.
Hello, I'm Mohamed Mahjoub. I'm from Libya. I'm part of the NINA team, Near East and North Africa. I'm a civil engineer, also study agriculture. I'm part of the third cohort of the Youth Policy Board team.
Hello, my name is Nada Zamel. I'm from Tunisia and I'm with Qasem. I represent the NINA region. I'm a human rights advocate and researcher, and my focus is on the intersection of gender inequality and climate justice, specifically in the Swana region.
I would like to ask you, as you are from different regions or some are from the same one, if you could tell us about what specific agri-food system challenges you have to observe in your region.
I can start with my region and specifically my country. Most of the challenges that I've witnessed and during my research is the inequality that women face in the agriculture sector. Women are the backbone of agriculture and the workforce, but when it comes to their rights and land ownership, they're facing serious discrimination, and agriculture and climate justice is their right, and have the right to own the land that they work on is fully their right. And food is everyone's right. So, yeah, these are the challenges that I care about the most in my region.
I have maybe another different perspective of the challenges, because I'm a part of the youth and we're facing a lot of challenges even individually. So the people from our age, they're not, you know, going into agriculture as a major sector for them, for job opportunities. But we are focusing on try to make this more attractive to them, just try to make them know what are the real issues. Right now we're not having serious food insecurity issues, but maybe in the future everyone needs to be assure that he's in the safe side of every issue.
So in the Asia Pacific region, we're focusing on safe, healthy and sustainable diets. So in the Asia Pacific, and particularly in Oceania, which is where I'm from, and with the Pacific Islands, non-communicable diseases are one of the largest issues that we face. And that's largely because of the consumption of unhealthy imported foods. So our initiatives through the Youth Policy Board are looking at how we can leverage youth creativity and innovation to redesign what food labeling looks like in our region for impact.
That's definitely true, just like what my colleague Michaela said regarding the healthier food consumption among young people. Even in my country, Indonesia, we love vegetables, we love fruits, but we fried fruits, for example, banana, we fried banana. And it's nice, but we cannot say it's good. It's really nice. I mean,
next time I want to try. Next time you're bringing
should, you
it.
You should. Yeah, but yeah, you know, it's it should be something healthy, but it's because it's fried, it changes. But we cannot tell people like, you cannot eat this because it's kind of cultural, you know, kind of background that already happening for a long, long time. That's why it's important to raise the awareness for young people, especially to understand about basic nutritions and what they are actually needs for their body. And at the same time, nowadays, young people were given with a lot of choices of foods. For example, packaged foods, like, is everywhere. You know, it's supermarket, all these packaging foods. And we cannot say no with that. That's why it's important to like for young people to understand about food labeling awareness and to choose a better food for himself there.
So I'm representing the Africa region. I don't know how many of the million challenges we face you want me to mention. But I think to highlight some of the top line ones, there's like similar to Nina, there's like that disparity of land access. And we usually don't make the differentiation between farmers and farm workers. And a lot of the times, like people that own the farms don't necessarily till the land. And a lot of like smallholders would have access to the knowledge that is housed on the ground. And you just see there's a lot of inequity in access for young people, for women across the African region as well. But I'd also say access to skills development, we're still very much lacking in the development of that and even the programs that exist at the moment. The reality is you can go through as many programs as you wish, but if you do not have the access to the funding and the resources, and it literally gets as granular as seeds, you know, access to seeds to bring about and build a successful farm. And this is just one part of the value chain, because agri-food systems expands to logistics, to manufacturing, to production, and you find less and less smallholders existing in that. And this over, I think, glorification of commercial industries rather than locality. And I think if we're able to promote that local lens, that would amplify a lot of smallholders as well and increase like livelihood for people, because agriculture is still one of the biggest industries that benefit people and households across Africa.
What are the most crucial gaps you identify during your consultations, and how do these impact your people in your region?
Oh, we had lots, and money is always at the top of the agenda. But I think it's the lack of money, you know, that is really at the top of that agenda. But I also, another thing when we speak about like people's lived experiences on the continent, it's we address the top line problems, or we address the problems in a very isolated manner. Whereas the reality is, if we're going to speak or address hunger in any food system context, we need to address the systems that actually perpetuate hunger and all the injustices that we face within the food system. So I think a lot of people also highlighted how the siloing and just like almost like brushing up or even understanding food insecurity as more of like a rural problem, a conflict zone problem, and it's something that actually is looming also within our urban areas. And I think when you start to bring that reality to the forefront, that's when you're able to truly address and say what actually feeds the system. And also if we're able to address the systematic challenges that we face from a we need the banking sector to be involved within agricultural conversations. We need the insurance sector to be involved within the agricultural conversations, because farmers experience a lot of loss. Banks won't invest in farms because they say it's too risky. But insurance firms won't like work with farmers because they say, well, it's also too risky for them. But if you don't have a systematic approach to addressing challenges within food systems, then you kind of are like ensuring that we have these challenges for a really long time. And I always say, for me, there's no glory to work within the same communities and the same problems for 20 years, you know, and we pride ourselves in that, but we need to ensure that we're transforming those systems to ensure sustainability, not only from a planetary landscape, but to ensure that communities thrive and not just survive.
Yeah, from the Asia Pacific, we had several youth consultations that include surveys, we had also several youth assemblies happening, and they said a lot of things like the gaps that they are facing. And we have top two gaps. The first is about funding in doing actions in agri-food system. And the second is that about the lack of education, capacity development, and also awareness, especially about basic nutrients. That's why you bring this into our attentions to build our pilot initiatives regarding increasing the awareness of basic nutrients and also food labeling literacy for young people in Asia Pacific.
And I might just complement what Joko said with that second point around the capacity building and education. What we're really looking to do is invest in the youth and the people in the region so that they have the skills and the education and the information that they need to drive change. There's only so much that we can do as a volunteer youth policy board, but if we can empower those who are on the ground to have the information and access to education, that's where we'll see the real change occur.
Okay, our region is a bit big because we have 22, 23 countries, so it was really a challenge to try to do as small as a consultation as it needs. But we were lucky to have three main ones. The most important one was with the ARCOIN, Amman, Jordan. We had more than 100 young colleagues there. But I will focus on one of the main gaps that we identified is the serious lack of the accessibility for resources. I'm talking about education, finance, and also how to manage their work and businesses. This is why that we try to reflect that on our main global action plan.
Well, I would just add to what Qasim said. As he said, our region is big, and as we much as we don't like to say, we divide it to three, but it is kind of on three region, and some region face serious food insecurity, but some region faces so much food waste. So it's very diverse. So for us to try to find the gap that for each one, I think the lack of interest of young people in agriculture and food insecurity was one of the challenges that we identified from our personal environment and from the consultation, from the surveys. Well, I'm not blaming youth, but as he said, because there is lack of awareness, lack of education, lack of access, that makes young people have lack of interest in agriculture. But there's also the social aspect that agriculture is like, you get your hand dirty, it's not an attractive job, it's for old people. So our challenge is not just raising awareness, but removing this cultural idea that agriculture is not an attractive sector and anyone can do that. And even if you're interested in AI or technology, you can bridge these two sectors. And I have many amazing friends doing that. And yeah, that's it.
Amazing. Thank you for your insightful highlights of every region. And every region is different. But let's say even inside of the regions, countries are having and facing different challenges. So what are the main action items in your region, in your regional youth action plan, and how do you envision these steps will create positive change for youth?
The good news that we have been presenting this multiple times in the multiple tables, so it will be two. I remember that we suggested five, then we choose, you know, the top two, the most logical one, because yeah, because, you know, speaking about a plan is just not like to try to implement it in the real world. That's why we always advocating from policy to action. We had two. The first one is establishing an innovation hub for agriculture, try to foster knowledge, because, and also we try to connect the farmers to the local markets, and also for support the seed initiatives. It's variants, but for example, if we're talking about the national chapter of Qatar, they will move directly to the innovation hub implementing. But if we're talking about the national chapter of the other countries, maybe we will start with the foster knowledge, will be more appropriate for the characteristics of the region itself. The second one will be focused focusing on education that we really would depend on that. By courses, it will be on a multiple phases, multiple categories, and also stages, focusing on main topics that our region faces, like water management, and also providing training materials for that. And we are relying heavily on the national chapter, as I said. We have only three in the region from the 22 countries that I mentioned. We have only three, but next year I hope that we will see an expansion with that.
So the Asia-Pacific region also had two actionable items, so I might cover the first one and then pass to Joko to finish the second one. So the first actionable item is really about the practical training and capacity development of youth in our region around access to safe, healthy, and nutritious and sustainable diets. So we're running two masterclasses starting next week, the first of which really focuses more on the technical side of decoding nutrition labels, understanding the different packaging, front of package labeling, and different ways that companies communicate nutrition information on the packaged foods that are available to consumers. And then the second one is more about how youth can get engaged in the policy advocacy around the food labeling space. And in that session, we're really looking for the creative and innovative ideas that youth have to drive maybe different, more creative approaches to food labeling that are more relevant to young people and help them make the decisions that are best and best being locally relevant, healthy and sustainable for them and their communities.
Yeah, the second action item is more about capacity development for young people in a broader context. So it's not only about diets, not only about food label. It's more about sustainable agricultural practices, policies, and advocacy. So this second actionable items will be done after. So it's kind of we're doing step by step. For now, we are focusing on the first actionable items on awareness and education on food labeling. But after that, we will execute on the second actionable items. And basically, we cover the issues that is currently facing by the young people, especially about funding in when they are doing actions in agri-food system. And we will try to facilitate the young people, especially in the Asia Pacific, to the programs that WFF has already. For example, Transformative Research Challenge, or TRC, and then they have the Youth Food Lab, that I'm sure that this is a good opportunity for young people in Asia Pacific to establish their kind of initiatives in their local context.
Thank you. And from the Africa region, I think we've gone through so many iterations similar to our fellow regions here, but really wanting to drill down on what the practicality of implementation looks like and ensuring that we actually actively move from policy to action. And there were so many challenges that were highlighted during the regional assemblies as well as the survey that we had. But our main focus areas is how do we ensure that we don't reinvent the wheel in the entirety of the process, but to really collaborate and work with institutions that are working in the space. But we know that at the moment, there's a lot of people, or you'll find 10,000 people doing the exact same thing, but aren't necessarily optimizing the systems that they work in. So we want to ensure that we build partnerships that ensure that young people have, and indigenous peoples, as well as women across the African continent, have access to programs that are relevant, but also a continuity. So mapping, if there are existing youth programs that work within a silo, how do we match them with experienced farmers and farmers' networks that are for, like, maybe even sometimes commercial farmers, but more experienced farmers in essence, to ensure that there's an intentional knowledge exchange that is taking place there. And then we also want to ensure that we improve the digitalization process within the African landscape. And this was a challenge that we found throughout the process, because everyone's like, we still have such a huge digital divide. And we acknowledge that, and we know that there is. But we understand that innovation in Africa has to look different to the West. And we're not saying that we want to necessarily follow or take any of the innovations from the West and implement them in Africa, but we want to see how do we embed digitalization within different processes with the limited access that we do have. How are we using it to ensure that we can grow and also lessen that digital divide that currently exists? And this is through ensuring, like, if there's one cell phone, how do we ensure that that person is able to use the platforms that are accessible to them to then bring back that knowledge to local communities in the African context? Another aspect of things, because like I said earlier, money. Although it's a super challenging one to say, like, we can't, as like Michaela said, we're a voluntary youth policy board. We can't necessarily say, hey, we're going to give you the funding to do XYZ. But how do we ensure, because we've seen, like, if banks and insurance institutions are saying, but these people are not ready, they don't know how to manage money and it's too risky, how do we reduce the risk? How do we host workshops with farmers networks that are already existing and say, this is the additional knowledge that you need to implement into your programs, because these institutions are saying you don't have this or it's too risky. But if we lessen the risk, then hopefully we can make the case for actually these young people have gone through XYZ, they know 1, 2, 3, this is how they'll do it, they have a plan to do it, and through that actionable item to say, take a risk on them. But we've in essence wanting to embed like almost like systems change, but also really partnering, and national chapters would be so crucial for us to bring this to life as well.
Amazing. And I have one additional question that I would like to ask you. Seeing you being so inspired of the work you do and the way you talk about policy board and being given this opportunity through World Food Forum as a platform to raise your voices, is there any advice that you would like to give to youth who are willing to transform agri-food systems? Is there anything you would like to tell them?
Yes, I work with youth a lot, and I have been in intergenerational collaboration conversations quite a bit as well. And our case as young people has always been, we need a seat at the table. We need a seat at the table. And here we are, we have seats at the table, which we've earned, right? And
yeah,
I
exactly.
think there's this idea of like being given, but like we've really earned them through the work that we do and the communities that we work with and really showing our expertise. So what I would really say to young youth listening to this is to say, you need to validate your expertise. You know, if you're given a platform or you have a seat at the table, or even have an opportunity to just speak to someone, don't make the case for we need more young people. We know we need more young people. But I think what's missing is that is showing how, firstly, we are about the action. So if you can't do what you want to do with the millions that you don't have access to, do what you can and show that, but I can do this, and if you gave me more, this is what I would be able to achieve. I think if we're able to show and make the case of why we need more young people within these spaces, then it'll be a natural and easy decision for people to make, because it's like, well, this works. So if we are able to actually move past that and ensure that you're doing the work and not just speaking about it.
Yeah, I could say when we talk about change, like, don't wait change to happen, but be the force to make it happen, and do anything that you can do, like local level, in schools, in your community, because every small action is an action.
So I think I would like to take this in a slightly different direction, is we're dealing with these agri-food system challenges, right? That system word is really important. And we so often criticize existing power structures about how they are siloed and how they don't work together. And I feel like my advice to young people who would like to engage in this space is to learn from those mistakes and to say, okay, how can I be more collaborative? How can I make partnerships? How can I approach this with a systems thinking lens? And really not just have a seat at the table, but transform what those conversations look like.
I just want to remind youth, one of them, of course, that we are very linked to the people who were here before us. You know, we are part of a chain. So they were living in a really healthy lifestyle and a good lifestyle with a less amount of technology. So they had their conservative measures are still operating till now, for example, in Libya, my country. So I think one of the main keys to motivate youth that we have to be linked to our culture and our heritage, of course, but to try to make it more modern, more appropriate to the current situation. I think this is one of the most important things that is really motivating me from inside.
There is a saying that everyone wants a change, but no one wants to change. And we have to look at that really profoundly and think about what change do you want to see. Do it first. Like, you don't change doesn't happen in one day. It takes time, unfortunately, but it happens. So let's be hopeful and just say that agriculture is life. Like, we survive with food. We cannot live without it. So we really need to focus on it. And just remember, it's, agriculture is your right. Agriculture is the means of life. And reclaiming your land, working in agriculture is being part of your ancestors, your history, your culture. And we should all celebrate our culture. We should all celebrate our freedom, our justice. So agriculture is not just about the trees and everything. It's life. And we should cherish this, because if we're going to keep going the same way we're doing and not respecting Earth, we won't have anything left for us and for the next generations. So we should really be respectful of our land and practices and innovate and change.
Well, it's so nice to hear all these different perspectives and such a useful advices you're giving here to the youth who are actually being interested in leading a change. So thank you one more time for being here with us in our podcast. It was lovely having you all.
That concludes today's episode of the Food for the Future podcast. For more updates from the World Food Forum, follow us on social media and visit our website at world-food-forum.org. Until the next time,